If you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, hi. Welcome to The Rational Revolution. This is Chris Elfheim. I'm here with my favorite guest host, Mr. Tony Palmieri. Is it Dr. Palmieri?
Yes, but I don't really go by that.
I didn't know that.
It's a PhD.
Yeah, it's a PhD.
Well,
doctor.
Doc, I didn't know.
Doc, I think we got to work on that. I think we
like
got to give him some love on that.
I mean,
you
earned
it.
I tell my students to call me Tony.
Call you Tony. Okay, well, if I say Doc every now and then, it's fun. Welcome to our show. Again, this is The Rational Revolution, where we do our very best to have civilized conversations about things that matter to us around the kitchen tables. A lot of politics involved, but again, from a purple point of view. That may mean we get a strong blue and we get a strong red and we get somewhere in the middle, but we really do our best to have some great conversations. Tonight, our guest is going to be former Congressman Reed Ribble, a friend of mine. He actually is literally landing in Tennessee right now. So he will be jumping on the phone as soon as his feet reach the ground and he finds his phone once again. So we're looking forward to that coming in. In the meantime, Tony, what's been happening? Now, I wasn't here last week. I left the boys unsupervised.
Did you hear the show?
I did. I did actually hear. Where was I?
I don't know.
Does anybody know where I was?
You were in Green Bay somewhere.
No, weren't you like with the older folks doing some sort of
stuff? Oh, I was working.
Yeah, quote unquote working.
It's funny that I have to look at both of you and say, where was I? Yes,
we knew kind of
I was actually in
to.
The big town of Winnicottney. I was in Winnicottney doing a little estate planning.
Okay.
That's right. That's
cool.
Right. So I did get to hear the end of it just enough to text in and harass you a little bit.
I think we did okay.
It.
We tried to make sure we stayed in the purple spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult, but it was civil.
Yeah. You know, in the end, you definitely had red and you definitely had blue.
Yes.
Which means that creates a little purple.
Exactly.
So you win.
Exactly.
But I get to come back this time and have a little bit of fun, so I enjoy that. So let's talk a little bit as we're waiting for the congressman to jump in. Let's just talk about what's been going on around the world or around the town lately. What do you got?
Well, the government's staying open. How about that?
What? Imagine
How about that.
I did actually hear that Congressman Mike Gallagher voted against it.
I don't know what that's all about, but it's really interesting.
So did Tom Tiffany as well.
So the Republicans have been in this, you know, internal battle now for a long time. They got rid of the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. They brought in this ultra-conservative Mike Johnson, new Speaker of the House. And Mike Johnson negotiated this deal to keep government open, which is essentially the same deal that McCarthy had negotiated.
Because guess what? We have to run the government.
We have to run the government.
It's like, oh, wait, maybe we should pay people.
Yeah. And so, but apparently it's only keeping it open until January. There's going to be another big battle. Mm-hmm. And in February, there's going to be another big battle. But again, this is all because we have a Democrat as president and the Republicans running the House of Representatives. I mean, when Trump was president, Republican, and we had a Republican Congress, they never threatened to shut the government down. So this is all partisan, is it not?
Well, I don't know that you can deny that there's gamesmanship at play.
It's a lot of gamesmanship.
But I think that it's even more dysfunctional now than it was before.
Oh, my goodness.
There's infighting that's going on that I think a lot of my Republican friends are shivering. They just kind of shiver. So it's just, you know, they've got their issues that they need to work out. And I think that, you know, at this point in time in our history, you've got the bullies are trying to take over the playground.
That's the way that I see it. Here's what I don't get. How do people think that it's a strong argument to say either give us what we want in this budget negotiation or the military doesn't get paid?
Yeah.
Or people don't get their Social Security checks. How is holding people hostage like that supposed to be a persuasive argument?
Yeah, it's not. But and again, I think I said this once before. This whole, you know, they're arguing on issues that take more time to think. There are issues that could be fixed, right? We do
have.
I don't know if anybody could argue that we do have a spending issue. There is a spending issue, but instead of having serious conversations about what, why, where, and when. It's just kind of this grandstanding that goes on at the end. And and that's not the way to fix it. And I've said this before, I'll say it forever. I am a fan of streamlining. I'm a fan of efficiency. I'm a fan of removing duplication. That does not mean in any way getting rid of any services. It doesn't mean not taking care of people. It means we can identify if there is overlap that's unnecessary.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's a rational thing to do. So it's okay to say we have to figure out what we're going to do here. It's not okay to say, let's just stop doing everything we've done before because we don't like it.
Because we don't like it.
It doesn't work that way. You can't take your ball and walk off the playground.
That's true.
It doesn't work in this world.
Now, in Wisconsin, we did have a major bipartisan deal this week, and it was on the Brewers stadium.
Yeah.
So taxpayers will be ponying up a substantial chunk of change to keep the Brewers here until 2050, I believe, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on that topic. I do know that where it started and where it ended are two different things.
Yeah.
So there was some compromise on it. And again, largely bipartisan in terms of passing. I don't remember the numbers on it, but I think there was 8 or 11 Democrats voted yes.
I can't remember the exact numbers, but
the Republicans were actually more split on it than the Democrats.
They were. Well, how do you feel in general about the idea of public dollars for these kind of private sports stadiums, privately run?
I'm not a fan of millionaires and billionaires getting to be bigger millionaires and billionaires when taxpayers are paying for something. But I think that if we look deep into the deep closets, we would find that that actually goes on all the time.
Oh, sure it does.
All the time. So it is a reality of we enjoy and we get value as a state out of these large organizations being here. I mean, we're sitting in Green Bay. We are surrounded by Green Bay stuff. Now, I'm a shareholder, so that makes me a big deal. Me and my grandma share one. But, you know, there is value that comes from it, but we still are in a situation of, again, trying to balance. What do we have money for?
Right.
And when we have a hard time funding our public schools properly, or, again, even safety and fire, we would love to have more patrol officers on the streets, drunk driving, whatnot. We have to pick and choose how we spend our dollars. So I do think that it's difficult for people across the state. If they're not baseball fans, they don't understand at all.
No.
They don't. And I get that. I think, again, where are you? What's your situation? And can you see why someone would be irritated that we are or aren't going to fund it?
Yeah.
I think you can see it from multiple perspectives. I think it's good for our state to have great competitive teams. I think there was an awful lot of argument down in Milwaukee when they redid the Buck Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
But from the Buck Stadium, that allowed them to bring in bigger acts. They do shows. They do all kinds of things. The Bucks themselves have really come around. So, you know, again, we enjoy the ride when our teams are doing well. And we don't seem to care and potentially get irritated when they're not and then wonder why we're spending any money.
But again, I always find it just interesting what our politicians can achieve bipartisan agreement on.
Yeah,
it's at the federal level. It's usually for defense spending. There's always bipartisan agreement on that. And then in the states, it's often for what I'll call corporate welfare type of projects.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think it's interesting in all the states, and I've talked about this before, but I don't know if it was Eisenhower or one of the presidents when they came out of World War II, when we switched everything into kind of this industrial machine, you know, how would that affect us in the long run? And Wisconsin is no different. I mean, we have defense contractors all over Wisconsin.
Sure we do.
So when you have senators in D.C., all of our states have thousands and thousands of jobs that rely on these manufacturing companies, the industrial base, all from Marinette all the way down into southern Wisconsin. So when you have entire towns that are based around a manufacturer, it's no different than the paper industry. You take a paper mill out of one of our small towns and it almost devastated, if it did kill multiples.
Sure.
So I think the defense budget is interesting because, yes, we all want to be safe. Yes, we want to protect the world from evil. But also, there's this economic handcuff to it because we want our people at Oshkosh Oshkosh Truck building trucks. Mm-hmm. And we want Marinette Marine building Marines, and we need all those other companies that are building parts for them to do it. So I think it's interesting that we almost always say yes to increased defense budget spending because it is our community. Our community needs jobs. And is that healthy or not? I think you could debate that.
Well, imagine if we could move toward a genuine peacetime economy and you could have a lot of this military production go towards a civilian infrastructure. I mean, for example, suppose there was more support for high-speed rail, right? The people building the military vehicles could be building train cars.
Yeah. I think that that's one of the magic wands we don't have. I think
unfortunately.
That, yeah, the idea of having a world that isn't in need of protection or defense is probably not going to happen. We don't get to control that. But nice thought, Tony. Really?
Hey, if we had high-speed rail, I'd take high-speed
rail. High-speed
rail
is another conversation that we can talk about. Yeah. That I love the idea, to be honest, of being able to jump on a train from here in Green Bay, from Appleton, and then scoot on down to Milwaukee.
But here's the thing, Chris. Huge numbers of Americans in polls say they would love something like that. So why can't we have it?
Well, because there's a big bill that goes with it. That's the bottom line. And again, we've got people that live in cities and have enjoyed traveling in cities understand the value of a rail system.
Yeah.
But you have the bulk of our state who has zero interest in that. Do you know how many people have never left the county they live in?
Isn't that amazing?
Do you know how many people don't go to Chicago because of the traffic? Look what you're missing out on because you're afraid of traffic. I had my poor 16-year-old when she first got her license. I had her drive through Chicago traffic. Through Chicago to learn.
Oh, that was an adventure, I'll bet.
Yes, at one point in time, she let go of the steering wheel and clapped three times. I said, bad idea. But you have to defeat that fear, but a lot of it is, you know, going into a dynamic where you're uncomfortable. And people don't enjoy being uncomfortable. Well, you walk into a big city. I mean, I'm a small town, you know, farm girl. You go from a small farm in central Wisconsin to downtown Chicago, and if that doesn't open up your eyes
sure does.
You know, but that's empathy. That's understanding that things are different.
Yeah.
Listen, we are here. It's our first segment. We are looking forward to former Congressman Reid Ribble coming up very soon, as soon as he lands. Thanks for being with us tonight. We are here, Rational Revolution. We'll catch you on the backside. Hello again, this is Chris Alpha. I'm with the Rational Revolution with my friend, Dr. Tony Palmieri. I mean, that's just kind of fun to say. You earned it. We are hanging out here on our Thursday, one of the last few warm Thursdays, but the wind is picking up. Be careful out there.
Yeah, it is.
And don't forget about the deers. You know, we all love you when we say watch out for deers.
The deers.
The deers. Watch out for the deers. You know it's bad when you just drive down the road and you count red, greasy spots.
I was actually driving in this morning, and somebody was actually talking about the deers on the road, and there laid one right on the
absolutely.
Side of the road.
Yeah. Oh, my absolutely. Goodness. It's like, oh, that was a semi. There's nothing left. But, there, you know, it is the season. We're in Wisconsin. Yeah. It is what it is. All right, Tony. So as we wait for Congressman Ribble, he literally touched down in Nashville at 7:06. So we are expecting him to call in any minute, but we'll just keep on gabbing.
You know, you and I had talked before the show about the issue of Wisconsinites liking to split the ticket when they vote. So they'll vote for a Democrat for one office and a Republican for another office. Yep. You have split your ticket in the past, right?
I have. You know, and I don't think I'm that odd. I think, and again, we're talking, this is just a conversation. So there's no right or wrong. But my opinion is that the moderate / independent in Wisconsin, and there's a lot of them, and I've always been one of those people, is a believer in balance.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at the moderate or the independent's role in government to lean away from chaos. You lean against it to counterbalance it. And the moderate, I think, fills that role. And when we have chaos, you know, it doesn't matter what the party. For instance, and again, I'm playing the purple role.
Right.
If you have Bernie Sanders is a great example. Bernie Sanders is loved by the progressives. Loved by the progressives. The moderates, not so much, because it's too much. We look at things and think we can't just undo everything and redo. I'm afraid of that. A moderate doesn't like the extreme liberal agenda because we don't understand the math. We don't understand how we can just turn things upside down. We want things to be more environmentally friendly, but if we can't afford to pay the teachers in the schools, how do we afford to make all the buildings greener? So I look at things. So when you have somebody that's on the far edge, I have a moderate or an independent has a tendency to lean against that. Then you have the MAGA level Republican,
right.
And that's a whole nother version of crazy. And now you have all of the moderates and the independents leaning against that. So it's a matter of wanting balance. I have been somebody that is a believer of, we have two senators. We have two representatives in D.C., I like them to be one from each party. I think that's why we have a problem with Johnson, because we have Tammy, who's very strong. Tammy, and again, you know, I've said this before, Tammy is not as liberal as people think. She does a good job of watching out for the industry of Wisconsin as well as the people of Wisconsin. She really, I think, does not get enough credit. And then you have Johnson, which everybody on the blue can't stand Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
And I am not a fan of his, especially in recent history. But you still have in your mind this concept of you don't want all or nothing. You want there to be compromise. And so the independent mind, the moderate mind, likes to have one of each. That's just who we are, because we aren't all one way or all another. I want to be good to people. I want to take care of people. I want to educate people. But I honestly don't want to be paying 42% of what I own in taxes. I think that's a fair statement. And I think there's a lot of people that fall into that. So we have to find balance. And moderates and independents believe in balance, which means we make decisions that sometimes drives people crazy.
Yeah.
And I will say wrong decisions at times. Wrong decision. And I will put myself out there. I have made wrong decisions at the ballot box because I was not educated enough to look beyond the individual race and look at the philosophical secondary and tertiary consequences that would come from that race. And I think a lot of us, I refer to that as complacency, just not being invested in the information or in the detail enough to realize that one decision on a ballot here has an effect for the next potentially 30 years regarding the Supreme Court. Most people, I believe, are not listening to political shows. Most people are not raising their hand and running for office. And unless you are, you don't actually have all the information you need. So mistakes are made. And I think there are mistakes made in the middle, that through trying to do good, harm has been done by the center because they've been so focused on being split ticket balanced voters that chaos has taken place
in spite of us. It's become really difficult for, say, people that call themselves liberal Democrats. It's become really difficult for them. Even if they say there's Republicans I maybe want to vote for. I mean, if you look at what has happened to the Republican Party today, it's very, very difficult for even a moderate Democrat to say I'll vote for one of those.
Right.
So like in our state, Warren Knowles was one of the great Republicans. I mean, he was like an environmentalist. Even Tommy Thompson now seems like a strong moderate.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at today's Republicans, say in the state of Wisconsin, who could a moderate Democrat even vote for? The only one I can come up with is State Senator Rob Coles from up in this region, the Green Bay region. I mean, Rob Coles was the only one recently when the Republican majority state Senate literally fired almost all of Governor Tony Evers' cabinet picks, right?
Yeah.
And Rob Coles was the only Republican senator who went against that.
Yeah.
Right. He said, we're opposing people on purely partisan, unfair grounds. So I think that is what's happened, right? It's this kind of argument is war, this hyper partisanship. And so you could see why would a moderate Democrat vote for any Republican in that kind of a situation?
Well, I think it's sad right now because I think that there are, I wouldn't refer to them as moderate Republicans. I would just refer to them as rational Republicans. It's okay, and it's anticipated that we don't agree on things. But I think that the spirit of where things are right now ends up being, this is money driven. And in the end, if you have to have the backing of the supporters, the party, the dark money, the PACs, this is the world that we live in now. Money has to be there to back you. So if you've got the ultra right dark money PACs pushing for what they want, and you don't, as a Republican, don't want to follow along, they're just going to threaten to primary you out.
Exactly.
So I think what's happening is that we are losing. We're losing a lot of good, rational Republicans because money is winning and money is more extreme than that. So there's a difference, I think, between those that are in position, those that are voting for those in position, because again, not all the detail is known out there. And you could argue on the other side as well. You could argue that that if you're on Team Blue and you don't back the conservation group or the labor group, it'd be the same issue. But I don't think that's the case. And I will say this from my opinion, from my expertise, I have been questioned by those groups last year, and I disagreed, and I told them point blank, I would rather run the risk of making you mad 15 to 20% of the time than to pretend I'm going to agree with everything you say.
Oh, that's, yeah, I like
and
that
you either
position.
Take me at that or not, but I will never be 100%er.
Yeah, I like
we
that.
We continue our conversation. It is me and Dr. Tony Palmieri. Soon to join us, Congressman Reed Ribble. Welcome on back on the backside.
We all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction,
like to join the rational revolution and engage? Download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. Choose your station, WGBW or WISS, and click on the text button in the lower right-hand corner. Looking at today's issues through a politically purple lens, this is the Rational Revolution. And once again, here's Chris Elfheim.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Rational Revolution. I am Chris Elfheim, and I promise to have a purple conversation, and I can't do that with just Dr. Palmieri on the line here with me. I think the right thing to do is bring in some red. So, Congressman Reed Ribble, are you with us, my friend?
I am here.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the extra effort. I know you're hopping planes and here and there. I love that you're willing to take some time and share it with us.
That's great. It's good to be with you, Chris.
Absolutely. Remember we used to share beers down the road in the office?
Yeah,
we always had to make sure you were drinking a Wisconsin one and not a Guinness.
We did.
Oh, those were good times. We would sit there and talk Social Security and we'd talk Alzheimer's and then we just, you know, poke fun at whoever was trying to run for office at the time. And
wow.
We had a good time.
Well, trying to be gentle.
You were. You're a gentleman. All right. So we're going to bring you in on a couple of conversations. And tonight, I didn't prep you. You have no idea what we're going to talk about. And I like it that way.
That's right. I have no idea. So I might have to make something up.
Just make it up. Just wing it. First, I want to tell you, so I shared with a conservative friend of mine from the Appleton Council the other night that you were going to be on the show this week. And I no more than got it out of my mouth, and her response was, oh, he's not even a Republican anymore. I would just like you to respond to that statement. Are you a Republican?
Well, no, I get why people think that, because I don't support Donald Trump. And so people automatically assume that if you don't support Donald Trump, then you can't be Republican.
Right.
My contention is that Donald Trump isn't a Republican.
Yep.
And Donald Trump is a flat-out populist. He has as much in common with Bernie Sanders as he does with Ronald Reagan. but I just can't support the man. I won't vote for him if he's the nominee. But I can tell you that in the last election, every down ballot vote that I cast other than the president was for Republican.
Yeah.
So you can make your own determination.
Yeah. I think that's
on that.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem. The fact that someone made that statement, I've known you for a long time, and I've known you to be a rational conservative. You're strong right. in who you are, but you are also looking to take positive actions wherever possible across. In fact, you were the one that said that to me one day. I think we were sitting at the Starbucks in De Pere, and you said that it was your job to understand as a congressman that you are not going to agree on everything with everyone across the aisle, but go find things that you can agree on and get it done. Water.
That's correct. And yeah. it probably was in response to a question of, you know, why do people fight all the time in D.C.?
Right.
Well, what I discovered is nobody was actually looking for agreement.
Right. Right. No,
nobody actually looked for it, but I would go out and try to find it, and you could find those areas of common ground.
Yeah. It's sad that people make assumptions. In fact, I was at a function last night, and we had a great conversation. You had joined Emily on the show a number of months back,
yeah.
one of our first shows. And people had been listening to the show, and they said to me that, you know, the goal of the show is to have a purple conversation. Listen to multiple sides to try and be a better version of yourself. And when you were on that show, they came into the show assuming that you were, you know, a crazy, crazy radical Republican. And they left that show realizing that that's not true. You're actually a very civilized, rational guy. Yes, you are. And there's a lot of rational people out there. We may not all be on the same team, but that doesn't mean that we aren't trying to cause good, even though we may differ in opinions on things. That's the way that it really was meant to be. So tell me, you know, from your perspective, why are we in the chaos that we are?
Well, you know, I mean, this is the result of populism in and of itself, because populism is a movement of the people against government and against what they call the elites. It's always been that way, and that every populist wave in the country has done the same thing. And this is really driven by baby boomers, quite frankly. And the boomers have always been a bit nervous about government. They've always disliked government. And even as a conservative, I prefer a smaller footprint by government than a larger footprint by government. But it's evolved into this that everybody in D.C. is bad. All government is bad. I mean, listen, Vivek Ramaswamy probably has the most populist mentality of the group besides Donald Trump, where he's saying we should just eliminate 50% of the federal workforce.
Yeah.
And we're going to do it based on their Social Security number. So if you get an odd Social Security number,
wow.
you're out. And if you get an even, you're in. Which this is like the dumbest thing a person could possibly do.
There's a lot of dumb. There's a lot of dumb going on. I don't know who it was that stood up. Somebody was saying last night, somebody stood up and said there are dumb days and then there are dumber days. There's a lot of dumb and dumber days going on right now in politics.
So, Congressman,
well, it certainly feels that way from the outside.
Yeah.
Congressman, what did you feel about the way Kevin McCarthy was deposed? Did you think that the Republicans that engineered that, was that an example of the populism you're talking about? Were they out of line in your view?
I don't know that it was an example of populism. I think it was this basically was a personal vendetta that some of these folks had against Speaker McCarthy. And so they levered a rule change that they demanded when they gave him the job. And that rule change was that any one member of the chamber can make a motion to vacate the chair. And that's a privileged motion, meaning it must be voted on.
Right.
And so I would hope now with Speaker Johnson that they change that rule and maybe have to have a third of the majority or something do it. Because, you know, these same people that went after McCarthy, I call them the crazy eight, they are also the same people that will have all over Twitter this concept of the uniparty, how there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats, but they simultaneously joined with 208 Democrats to oust the Speaker.
Right.
And so it was fine for them to work with Democrats when it meets their end.
Yeah.
But if anybody else votes for the Democrat for anything else that they don't like, then it's all, well, that person's a member of the uniparty. Or like this lady said to you the other night, well, Ribble's not even a Republican anymore, because if you can find any agreement at all, then you're on the opposite side. But I think it was a horrible move. And it threw the House in chaos for 3 weeks.
Yeah, sure did.
And, you know, and their whole argument was, well, we want to pass our individual appropriation bills. Well, now they bring them to the floor with an open rule. So they have all these crazy amendments, like we're going to remove someone's pay down to a dollar and all this nutty stuff that they do. And then they can't pass them.
Right, because they're crazy.
And so we're at the exact same place we were when McCarthy was in charge. The only difference was that McCarthy knew they couldn't pass him. That's why he didn't bring him to the floor.
You know, I feel like when you're out on doors now, it feels like the number one thing you hear is about we're not getting anything. No one's happy. The Republicans aren't happy because they don't think they're getting what they want. The Democrats aren't happy because they're not getting what they want. No one's getting anything. So the lack of anything seems to be the problem. So what's from your opinion, what's the solution? As somebody who is down there, what do you think needs to change?
Yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately, the voters are in charge of this. And you know, it's easy to throw it back at them, but they're the ones that elected Donald Trump. They're the ones that put this House representatives or this Senate in charge. And at the end of the day, they want their member of Congress to be as angry as they are, while they simultaneously cannot really define what they're actually angry about.
And whose fault is it that they're angry?
Whose fault is it that they're angry?
Yeah.
Well, I think when you give them everything they want, which in fact is what we've done, that's why we've got a $34 trillion debt today. You give them everything they want, they just want more, while simultaneously saying, we can't have all this deficit spending until, of course, they want to vote for something they want.
Yeah. And, I've said that a lot. People are very selfish. They really want everything that they want, and they never want to give anything. And this goes at local, state, and national level. We are all selfish beings. We want what we need. We want what we want, and we don't want to give anything up. But we don't want to pay for anything that we don't see as value to us. And we're all guilty of it.
And, right. And I mean, here's the real dilemma that I really believe the country's facing right now, is there is going to come a period of austerity, and it will be forced upon us by, you know, the dollar may lose its global currency status. The government may not be able to afford the interest on the national debt anymore because their bonds are worthless. Or the interest rate on the bonds are so high that they're now paying $1 trillion or more than $1 trillion in interest. And so austerity will be forced on us in a way that would not have had to have happened if back in 2010 or 11, when I was elected, we could have done some of the restraining things that needed to happen then. But this populist moment we're in, and here's an example of where Trump agrees with the Joe Biden, for example. Well, you can't touch Social Security, you can't touch Medicare, you can't touch veteran benefits. Well, these programs are bankrupt in the country.
Yeah, and we can talk about that a little bit. I mean, you and I have had many conversations about Social Security and Medicare. I know that you have tried your very best. The entire time you were in D.C., you worked at finding solutions. I know you did. We talked through those plans. And I think I work with money for a living. So, you know, the financial world is my world, especially in the retiree area. So Social Security and all that stuff is very important. But we're to a point where no one is allowed to talk about it. No one in D.C. is allowed to talk about the fact that we have to do something. We have to make some changes. Anyone my age knows that Social Security, Medicare will change. We know it. But no one's allowed to bring it up. I don't care if you're on the side of the blue or the red, without the money of the PACs on the opposite side slinging mud saying, oh, look what they're going to take away. And it puts everybody in a situation of not being able to be honest about it. We do have an issue. We have to fix it.
That's correct. We have to fix it.
Yeah.
And there's so much misinformation out there about it, particularly about Social Security, about how the government stole all this money from the trust fund. The fact of the matter is the government receives the payments from the workers. They immediately pay out the benefits. If there is a surplus in that pay period, that money gets invested in government bonds because they're not allowed to invest it in stocks, but sticking it in a mattress someplace and not getting any interest is stupid. Right. And then people say, well, you see, they took the money. And there's just so much misinformation about it. And you just have to raise taxes. Well, that'll get you part of the way there.
Right.
You know, and to me, if something is not politically feasible, it is not feasible.
Right.
So the Democrats always wanted to just raise taxes to meet that shortfall. You know, that's not politically feasible because Republicans won't vote for just that. Republicans only want to change benefits and not add any taxes. Well, that's not feasible because Democrats won't vote for it.
Right.
So when I wrote my legislation, I wrote a bill specifically designed so that both parties would hate it.
Yeah.
And if both parties hate it, you probably hit the sweet spot. I raised taxes and I modified benefits. And in some cases, I raised benefits.
Yeah.
You know, so that no senior would be living with less than 125% of poverty.
Well, and it's a big deal. And again, the last time you and I talked about Social Security was probably, when did you retire? Was it 5 years
2017.
Ago? 2017. Mm-hmm. So it's been since 2017. And in the plan, one of the plans that you had, it was only going to affect, you know, people that were 50 and under, or something like that. It would have been, again, a generational gap, and no one in force would be affected. But every 5 years that we wait, we lose more than 5 years in time to remedy. So the more time we waste in not talking about it and not finding the number, whether it's a 50-year-old, whether it's a 55-year-old, tell us, because we have planning to do. At some point in time, it's going to have to change. And again, I'm not about taking what you cannot mess with anyone that is within, you know, a sniff of being retired. You can't do it. We have to find the break point where we can say to a certain generation from that point on, you're going to have benefits that are a little bit different. Medicare is another issue.
That's correct. Yeah.
And Medicare, I'll tell you, what they're doing with Medicare is hiding stuff. It used to be very straightforward, and now they're sneaking stuff through the gaps, and I think that's a sneaky way into doing it. I don't like that either. We got to head into a break. Hold on. We're going to come back on the other
Medicare
side.
Medicare is a bigger problem.
It is a bigger problem. Come back with us on the other side of the break. We have Congressman Reed Ribble with us. We have a nice long segment to finish up with you, so hang on there, Congressman. Everybody else, come on back at the break. Welcome back, everybody. Thursday night with Rational Revolution. I'm Chris Alfine. My friend Tony Palmieri is here with us. And on the line, we have Congressman Reed Ribble, my friend, with us. Hey, we got a text in, Reed. I want to read it to you. It says, I am a split-ticket independent. That being said, sadly, the last two Republicans I could bring myself to vote for were the late, great Mike Ellis and you, Mr. Ribble. Will you ever run for office again? That's from Jim in Appleton, our friend. I know the answer to that, but go ahead and let him know.
That's really kind. Yeah, that's really kind. But no, I'm not going to run. I'm not going to run again. And to be honest with you, I don't even think I could get elected again. But
wow.
But that's okay. That's a really kind statement to make.
You know, you did, I would say, voluntarily term limit yourself.
I did.
Yeah. Do you think that we need formal term limits in the U.S. Congress? Would that help?
I'm not sure anymore, because when you do a deep dive on the data, what the data tells you is that the average term or time that a member is in the U.S. House of Representatives is 10 years.
Oh, is that right?
So that's five terms. And the average in the Senate is 12 years. And so, but you have a cadre of people that are there for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that then hold all the power, and they won't give it up. Right. And so it kind of perpetuates this bad system. And when they put in Kevin McCarthy as speaker and then Mike Johnson afterwards, one of the big things they were pushing for was a reform that would devolve power back to the members and remove some of the power from the speaker's office.
Right.
And I think some of those ideas were good.
Yeah.
And if in fact they can get power back to members, then I would have less concern about term limits, because people could feel like I went there, I got something done, and I left, as opposed to going there, not getting anything done, and just leaving in frustration and being filled with cynicism.
You know, one of the things that you and I would talk about in the past was the idea of changing around the terms themselves. With a two-year term, you barely know where you're going to your meetings. and you have to immediately start raising money for your next campaign. There's really no time to actually get anything done. You have to get acclimated and then start rerunning again. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, what happens, and I know this from personal experience, because I was in what was a purple district at the time. The district was 50.6% R versus 49.4% D, how people voted.
That sounds like a well-drawn
when I was
map.
Elected. So it was a real true purple district, and I defeated a Democrat incumbent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those swing districts like Wisconsin 8, it's less swingy today. It's much redder today. But when it was a swing district, those members have to spend so much time out raising money that they're not as involved in policymaking as they want to be.
Right.
And so who's involved in policymaking are the people in the bright, bright red districts or bright, bright blue districts that have either been gerrymandered or by choice of where people live. You've got a real red district, so you've got a really red, ultra-conservative guy or a real blue, ultra-liberal person. And they're the ones that actually, because they don't have to raise much money, they're the ones that can be working on everything. And so things get pushed to the parameters more than what it normally would.
Hmm. And, How do we get the money out?
To me, the best way to get the money out would be a very simple change in the rules. And that would be to do this, that no member of Congress can receive a corporate PAC from anyone in an industry of which they have oversight in. So if you're in the Financial Services Committee, you couldn't get money from the financial services industry, from banking and investments and all that kind of stuff. If you're on agriculture, you couldn't get money donated to you from farming and timber and all that kind of stuff. And so, because what happens is as soon as those industries see that you're on a committee, they start throwing fundraisers for you right away.
See, Congressman, what you just said, I believe 99% of Americans would support what you just said. Right? And yet, why?
Yeah, it'd be pretty simple to do, too, wouldn't it?
Exactly. So why can't we have it if that many people want that and it's so commonsensical?
Well, I think that sounds like a very rational step
exactly.
forward. However, I don't think it really solves the bigger problem. I mean, how do you feel about the Citizens United? How do you feel about the fact that there's so much dark money going on?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question, and you're not going to like my answer, just because I know you're not going to like the answer. let me put it this way. The answer will be unsatisfying to you. But the answer is I felt that Citizens United was properly decided, and here's why. Virtually every major media company in the U.S. is essentially a for-profit company. NBC News, Fox News, Newsmax, ABC News, they're all for-profit entities.
No.
They have unlimited political speech. Unlimited. And yet my roofing company had no free speech on the political side. And so what the Supreme Court said is, hold it here, you can't have it both ways. We can't have one industry having unlimited ability to spend money on political speech and another company having no right at all.
Well, then wouldn't the solution be to...
If any company is going to have the right to have free speech, they all must have the right to have free speech.
This is why we're going to have you back on, because we could go on for hours. We have 2 minutes left on this one, but wouldn't it just be easier to just make the news be the news and kind of Walter Cronkite style, where they're only allowed to share the news instead of the nonsense?
I would actually watch that.
Right, me too. Because what we have for news, and there's so many stations that say they're news, but they're not news. They're opinions or their own version of, like us, we're not the news.
Yeah.
We're just a conversation, right? So I understand your philosophy. I understand what you're saying, but that then assumes that everything that's ever said on the news is then paid for the other team. And I don't think that's valid. But there is an issue.
No,
I think we can agree there's too much money. There's too much money going on, and that really shouldn't be the end. That shouldn't be the end, right? I mean, you know me. I mean, I'm here in Wisconsin. $2.7 million on a state Senate race? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, bizarre.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And that's buying. That's buying power. That's buying position.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be working that way. Listen, I really,
I also blame the voter a little bit here. because they have to be able to swim through a lot of this misinformation that's being put out paid political ads.
Yeah, there is ignorance, and then there is willful ignorance, and one kind of feeds into it. Listen, I really, really respect you. I enjoy having you on the show. I look forward to our next one. I know we have a calendar of events. We're going to have you back. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. This has been The Rational Revolution. Chris Alfheim. We have Dr. Tony Palmieri and the fabulous former Congressman Reed Ribble. Thanks for being here tonight. Be safe. Watch for deer. Take care.